love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
What show gives you kids trapped in a refrigerator, space shuttle exploding, serial killer hunting down the neighborhood, and also the secret of Sherry's dead parents?
Hi, Rolando.
Oh, Nicole, what are you doing?
Oh, no drugs in the clubhouse, huh?
No drugs. And no drugs in the clubhouse.
Hi. Okay, of course you watched that episode.
Of course.
That's like a very special episode. They had a lot of very special episodes. Guys,
they did.
We're all over the place right now. And I do apologize, but we are talking about the one and only Punky Brewster, a lovable sitcom from the 80s that has gotten a revival through Peacock.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that me and Nicole are both visiting a sitcom together that we've never seen before, I think.
That's true, actually. Yeah,
I hadn't seen either of these two. I'm watching them specifically for this podcast and stuff. But one of us, though, not you and I, have... there is a fan in here, and that is Eddie. So, Eddie, you're kind of steering the ship a little on this one.
Oh, yeah, Eddie's
here. You're the fangirl.
Yeah. I am total fan of this show.
So, with that said, I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About
unoriginality.
I just want to say right off the bat, who would be anti-unoriginality? And that would be Punky Brewster, just in case. She was all about being original.
She was. Indeed,
she was.
She
That's
was.
That's why she always wore the different color shoes.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know who Punky Brewster was well until adulthood. I think the first time I ever heard of Punky Brewster was referenced in a South Park episode.
Oh, what reference?
There's this... This is so random, but there's this South Park episode from season 5 when they're doing like an Earth Day thing, and Terrence and Phillip is supposed to be there, but Terrence and Phillip has split up. So instead they put on a documentary called Behind. It's like making fun of Behind the Music, and they did one on Punky Brewster. So it's like Behind the Drugs or Behind the Curtain or something, whatever. And I was like, who the hell is Punky Brewster? I knew it was supposed to be like a joke, you know?
Yeah,
like
okay.
The way they made fun of
him. That's so interesting, right? Because I actually never had seen Punky Brewster, and yet through pop culture, like osmosis, I'm actually very familiar with Punky Brewster, right? I knew that she's an orphan. I know that she was kind of like this young little tough girl. And I know about Henry, like, oh, punker. I actually know that through Family Guy, of all things.
Oh, see, yeah. So watching Family Guy, I'm sure. Yeah, no, yeah, I hate that show. So
this is, I mean, no, it's not my favorite show at all. I literally used to watch it in college to fit in with the group of friends I was with. And I usually would criticize it. I actually related mostly to Eric Cartman when he was on a vendetta against Family Guy, right?
Yes, 100%.
But no, so I knew of Punky Brewster through osmosis. I did not really watch the show growing up. However, it was, surprised to say, like, I come to find out that this show only had 4 seasons, and I'm just like, wow, that's such an interesting, for this show to have, like, such a, it does have, like, a weird not cult following, but, like, it has, like, a devoted fan base almost.
Okay.
Despite the fact that, like, it didn't get a lot of reruns growing up. Like, I don't remember seeing this on Nick.
I never saw this. And I don't think it was in syndication for that long.
Right. So this is, like, an interesting property.
Yeah,
and even more interesting to, like, you know, revive it.
It is, yeah. And, you know, doing some research about the show, I found out some really interesting things. So the show came out in 1984, the year of Orwell. And, when you think about 1984 on TV,
I was about to say, just like, what do you talk about?
Like, yeah.
Instead of the year of our Lord, the year of Orwell.
I got it.
But if you think about actually the Nielsen ratings in terms of the most popular TV shows, Punky Brewster didn't even make the top 30.
Wow, really?
And I want to know how many of the top watch shows in the 80s you know about, because you know about Punky Brewster, but that wasn't what people were watching, apparently.
Right. No, I know.
So here are some of the shows that people were watching in 1984. The top watch show was Dynasty.
Okay, yeah, I know Dynasty, but I've never seen it.
Me neither. Two is Dallas.
Okay, I also know Dallas. Never seen it.
Three, Cosby Show.
Of course.
You know that. 60 Minutes. Yeah, I get that. Family Ties. The A-Team. Simon and Simon, right? It's starting to get a little bit like, okay. Murder, She Wrote, the greatest TV show of all time. So, of course, you know.
I know that through you.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's the best TV show ever. Knott's Landing. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. It's a spinoff from Dallas.
There you go. Yeah, well. Yeah,
never heard of it. Watched.
Falcon Crest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know that one, but I know that one through osmosis. And again, that was through Family Guy. Family Guy is all 80s references.
They're really 80s.
You know,
so. They grew up in the 80s. Crazy Like a Fox.
No, never heard of this one.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. It's got Jack Warden and John Rubenstein as the two leads. Hotel.
Nope.
That was tied with Cheers. So, you know, some
really?
Of these, we, yeah.
That's
some
crazy.
Of these we know, some of these we don't. Some of these other shows I see on this list here. Monday Night Football is one of them, of course. Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yeah.
You know that,
Eddie? Yeah. I've never heard of this.
Oh my God, Eddie. Remington Steele?
That I do know.
Pierce
Brosnan.
So it's funny because a lot of the shows that were pretty popular had to do with like private investigators.
Yes, Cagney and Lacey's also on there.
Oh, Cagney and Lacey.
Cagney. Oh, I've always wanted to reenact that opening. Highway to Heaven, Night Court. Okay, just, you know, it's just, obviously 80s TV is not my thing per se,
right.
But
well,
it's just
I know Night Court, but I know Night Court through 30 Rock.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and that's your favorite TV show.
It is.
Well, so Punky Brewster debuted in September of 1984. And to your knowledge, was this a commercial success or was this not a commercial success of a show?
From my knowledge, this show had 4 seasons. I know that much.
Yes.
I know that Soleil Moonfry would become not a household name, but she would be a recognizable name.
She would. Yeah. So interestingly enough, the show wasn't that much of a hit. But the character of Punky herself was a hit, particularly among children.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that this show did was that it had 2 full seasons. And then to ensure it was always on a Sunday, right? So to ensure that kids could get their fix of it, but like in a certain amount of time. Also, the fact that they didn't want to let go of football. You know, football's a mainstay in American culture. They actually shortened the episodes to 15-minute episodes.
Oh, interesting.
That would play right after a football game, like not too late at night, so kids could stay up and see it, like get their quick fix of Punky. So the last the last 2 seasons, I'm pretty sure, have a lot of those 15-minute episodes.
Oh, that makes sense. That's why, like, on Peacock. So I didn't see any of those episodes, but like they would have like 2 episode titles, and I was very confused. I'm like, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
is this, like,
yeah,
an
there would be
alternate title.
They'll be cut up. So
okay.
Cut up,
oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Kind of like shows on Nickelodeon and other kid networks are now. So that was, it only lasted for 4 seasons like that, but it was enough. She was popular enough among kids that she actually got an animated television show.
Yes.
Of this character of Punky Brewster, which my girlfriend watched the animated show. She had no idea it was a real life show.
That's so funny.
Which is, yeah, that's actually the most adorable thing. Yeah. She was like, when I told her that Punky Brewster was going to be revived, she was like, oh my God, are they going to have Glomer in it too?
Glomer. She remembers Glomer.
She remembers Glomer.
The Sprite. And I was like, oh my God.
I was like, what are you talking about? Glomer.
Glomer. Yeah. Glomer.
So that was her jam. I didn't even know it was an animated show. So she was that popular among kids that they did that.
Same. Neither did I.
Yeah. It was called It's Punky Brewster.
Yeah. And Soleil Moonfry did that too. Apparently.
Actually, they had all the voice actors for that. They all had all the actors doing the voices for their characters.
That's adorable.
Yeah, they all. Interesting that they would all come back, but for the animated version.
Yeah.
But, okay. Very well, very well. So, yeah, I mean, and it's so interesting, right, that you're mentioning kids here, because I think that plays an important role ultimately in the revival of why revive this show, right? And we could talk about that.
Sure, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple things about the production of the show, or at least the history, right? So Soleil Moonfry, who plays Punky, apparently when she auditioned, somebody else had gotten the role, and they were like, "Thank you, we'll call you." Like what they do in auditions, the stereotype. but she insisted that she finish her audition when went, and it was because of that spunk that she got casted as Punky Brewster.
I see what you were trying to do there. I don't approve, but I see.
I thought that was one of my more clever dad jokes. She was 8 years old when she got cast in this, you know, so she definitely embodied everything that they were looking for naturally, I think, you know, just that kind of sums it up in her audition and stuff.
Yeah.
And Soleil Moon Frye has gone on record saying how connected and how much she loves this character of Punky, you know, which is, I think she's actually been wanting to revive this character for a long time. So I'm sure she's quite happy about this new one. But
fun fact, wait, before you go there, mm-hmm. do you know who else had auditioned to be Punky Brewster?
Christina Ricci.
Oh, wait, shut up. Really?
No, I was joking. I just guessed.
I was about to say, it's like, that's all right. Who? You sold me. Eddie, I'll let you answer this since you're the one who told me this.
Melissa Joan Hart. Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
And then they started and then together.
Then they would work together on Sabrina the Teenage Witch when the college years.
The college years. Yeah, the famous 90s college year shows. So what is Punky Brewster about? Like you said, you know, America's favorite orphan after Little Orphan Annie. Punky Brewster, Penelope Brewster, was abandoned by her mother at a grocery store.
Right.
At the age of 8 years old with her dog, Brandon.
And what a name for a dog.
Yeah. And I think it was implied in the first episode that she wasn't on the street for very long. It was about a week or so. But she's roaming the streets looking for a place to stay, and she just so happens to roam into the right place, into a building and a vacant room right across from Henry Warnemont. Is that his last name, Warnemont?
Eddie?
Yes.
Okay. Eddie says yes.
A curmudgeon of an old man, a photographer who likes to live alone and makes, you know, really tasteless bad jokes at his neighbors.
They are very tasteless.
I love their chemistry. Him and Miss Johnson.
Always gotta go for her weight. I'm like, oh my god, dude.
I know. That's just like, this is that was that time period when
back in the 70s where it was the norm to shame.
Yeah, it was a fat joke, but
she wasn't even fat.
She wasn't. I know. It's so funny. Yeah. And I love her old man jokes.
Yeah. They could just go back and forth. I mean, she takes whatever he's got at her, you know. I'm like, really? You're gonna come for her weight? Easy target. Anyway,
he's also the building manager.
He is also the building manager.
So he's a photographer slash building manager,
a curmudgeon. In comes, you know, this 8-year old orphan who's just got so much life despite being abandoned. And the first couple of episodes are, you know, whether or not will he take her in. Maybe she has to go to a foster home, and so she gets sent to this place called Fernster Hall, mm-hmm. where there's other orphan children like her. You know, so the show really does give you an insight on something that I don't think we see a lot in sitcoms. You know, it is unique in the sense where it's a sitcom about what it is like to be an orphan and be in foster care, mm-hmm, right? That the whole system about that in America.
Which I guess technically she's not an orphan because her mom is still alive.
Yeah. Well, when you're abandoned by your parent, who knows when. I mean, would you be considered an orphan?
Yeah, you would consider.
You're considered an orphan?
Yeah, because even Little Orphan Annie believed that her parents were still out there and that she was left.
But you believe is different from the facts. Mm. But okay.
But
right,
if
fine.
You
so
were,
we
I mean,
consider
her mother's out there, you know, clearly she doesn't want her. So
right,
you know, that's
also
orphaned
true.
In spirit.
Yes.
Which is so shitty.
For sure. I mean, it is a pretty heavy subject for a kid's TV show.
Yes, it is, which is also why this show is like half comedy, half like, you know, lighthearted, sentimental show. It's like really full of those special moments that are supposed to tug at your heartstrings.
And shockingly super educational for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's the other thing I was like surprised when watching this. I'm just like, huh, they're teaching you CPR. They're teaching me nouns and verbs. Okay, Punky, go on with your bad self.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hang on. Give me a second. I'm getting a call.
Oh, I hope that's your food.
I hope so, too. Hello? Oh, I'll be right out. Okay. Let me just go get that real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care if you guys eat.
Leave everything
record.
Recording.
Okay.
I'll be fast. I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't know you could fit. I thought you were so skinny.
Aw. How's your knee?
It's much better. I'm taking anti-inflammatories.
Yeah.
Which have improved it greatly.
That's
and,
great.
And how do you say? I took a break from the gym, so I'm on my third week of not going to the gym, So that just heal it a little bit better.
Nice.
And that's it. I'm going to look for a physical therapist. The doctor said I should get a better understanding of my limitations. Because this is something I'm going to live with.
True. Yeah.
So he should say, have a better understanding of how I should move. If I'm going to exercise, how should I move my knee?
Yeah.
You know, so he doesn't want me squatting, which are my favorite. And,
Oh, that's your favorite?
Like the squats? Do squats? Yeah. I could do them all day long.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
That's all you were saying.
And lunges, which I hate. So he said no lunges. I'm like, aw.
All right. So it's bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Yeah.
Damn. That really sucks though.
Okay. I'm back.
Where's your food?
It's over there. I'll eat after the recording.
Are you sure?
It's fine.
No. I don't want to be like eating and like talking.
Okay. But yeah. So where were we? Were we talking
about?
We were
talking about like it's educational.
Characters? Educational. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And it's a really small cast, you know, so we really get to focus on character development and having, you know, these situations happening to these characters that they learn from and then thus we learn from. So there's Punky, there's Henry, and like we said, there's Sherry, who is a girl who is her age.
Mm-hmm.
And her grandmother.
Her grandmother, right, because her parents are dead.
Yeah, her name is Margot.
Wait.
That was her name?
Margot is her friend, her other friend, the rich girl, very preppy.
Sherry, you're thinking of Sherry.
Is Sherry Johnson her best friend?
What's the grandmother's name?
Oh, no. Mrs. Johnson.
Mrs. Johnson?
Mrs. Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
That seems all I know her as also, so.
You're asking the two worst people of name recall.
That's also very true.
They tried to get a spinoff show from this with Fernster Hall. They wanted to have a show completely focused on different kids, you know, left in foster care and all that. Didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if America was ready for a whole show about all orphans.
Seriously. Well, I think that was also very much like part of like how they debuted shows back then. Like, you know, I watch The Golden Girls a lot, and there's this really random episode that focuses on one of their neighbors, and I'm like, what the hell is this? Only to grow up to find out that was like a pilot for this show called Empty Nest.
Empty Nest. Yeah. Oh, it was a very good show. Very good show.
That show got picked up and lasted very long.
There's actually a specific word for that, and
backdoor pilots.
Right? Yes. Oh, good backdoor job, pilots, Eddie. Backdoor pilots. That's what they're called. So The Office has a famous one that never got picked up. Do you watch The Office?
No, I don't like that show.
Okay, so you wouldn't. But for all our listeners out there who might know, the episode with Shoot Farms was a backdoor pilot that did not work. And the network was just like, absolutely not. We're not making this a show.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Yeah. So that must also be an NBC thing, because these are all shows that were on NBC. So
it's not unheard of.
The Office, Golden Girls. I'm pretty sure Golden Girls was NBC and Punky Brewster. But anyway,
her name was Betty Johnson.
Betty Johnson.
Betty Johnson. Yeah.
Betty. Okay.
Yeah. And of course the dog Brandon, which is very much just like Annie, you know, very famous.
Of course,
girl
yes.
With her dog.
I mean, that's the first thing I thought of.
Right there.
Yeah. It's like a nice golden retriever. It was a puppy in the pilot episode.
Wait, what?
It was like a puppy. It was a very young dog. It grows as the show progresses.
Yeah. So the first couple of episodes in this show are about her, you know, will she not be part of Henry's home? You know, it like almost does like a three-part episode, and then finally she becomes part of Henry's family. And that whole thing is interesting too, about, you know, where do we put children? You know, it's like the state versus what Punky wants, you know, and like, I'm looking a little too deep into it at the same time, but like,
I mean,
you know, Punky's like saying she wants to stay with him, but like the woman, you know, Talia Balzum's character is just like, I think Punky should be with someone more experienced and all of this. And it does raise a good question about, you know, how do we take care of children?
Sorry, not to interrupt. Not only experience, but also age. Age is a factor here. It's like Henry is considered too old to be a parent, to be a foster parent too. So that played an interesting dynamic.
It did. And she told Henry.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, like, we should put her with someone, you know, you've never had a child before. I'm like, but all people who've never had a child before, like,
they can
have to
have
a child, you know, that's, you do it by having one.
I mean, no. I mean, these are all things that I feel like Eddie and I will have to, I feel like we're down the line going to have to deal with this shit. Because, like, the truth is that me and Eddie are planning on adopting down the line, right? So, like, these are all things that we're going to have answers for, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. Like, my fear is that if I wait too long, I'm going to be, they're going to be like, well, you're too old to adopt. I'm just like, all right, well.
Which is bullshit.
Like, what, like, it, technically speaking, I guess I'll procreate until I'm like 70. So am I really too old? I don't know.
It raises so many interesting questions about how that works, to be honest, because it's also like, you know, I mean, you can, people, heterosexuals can have a child and have many childs, you know, but like people who want to adopt have to go through so much. And it's like, really, like, what grounds are acceptable and what grounds aren't, you know? Sometimes it's a bit too much, so.
And the people who want to adopt, usually they want the kid.
Yeah. Like, yeah. They,
you know?
There are so many kids who are born into this world and neglected and all this stuff. Whereas, like, yeah, a person who's going through this process. So it was just, I had this interesting dialogue with myself watching those episodes.
No, I mean, it's a very, I can understand why. It's for that reason. I mean, yeah, yeah. I wasn't having those thoughts, but I understand where they are coming from.
For sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But so after that, I went to actually the internet. And Soleil Moon Frye picked out a bunch of her favorite episodes of the show, and then
A good idea. Nice. Which were some of the episodes that she picked?
Well, one of them was the one with Andy Gibb.
Yeah, she loves that one.
She loves that one.
Is Andy Gibb?
He's a he's, you know, the Bee Gees.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Bee Gees.
So he was a big heartthrob during that time.
The Bee Gees were heartthrobs?
Yeah, and she talks how very loving he was. Yeah. You know, to the cast, to the children there, you know, how very caring, and even to her, and she was just like, it's like one of her favorite memories.
Yes,
working on this show,
having a big crush on him, and just being starstruck and all this stuff. She did talk about the refrigerator one.
The refrigerator one. I saw it was a good one. That was where they were teaching CPR, basically.
Yes, yeah, which is educational, but also just like kind of hilarious.
I mean, poor Sherry got locked in a fridge, you know.
Yeah. And I remember like as like a little kid
being afraid of fridges afterwards.
Yeah, that was something that people talked about, like, say, don't play in those refrigerators, because you would see them. it was so funny, because I was just thinking about like them being thrown out in the garbage, right? And people be like, don't play in there. They would tape them up really good so no kids would like hide in there. So I remember like making that connection as a little kid, like, oh my God, that's like how Sherry almost died.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, older refrigerators, I think, had latches basically, right? Like you had to like lift, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But those were also, and they were like also big and bulky. Yeah. I'd be more afraid of it falling on someone. Than just being locked in. But, you know, everyone has their own fears.
Yes, they do. And that's not one of mine. I really wanted to watch one of their special episodes, so I did kind of look up different ones.
The drug episode.
And I found the drug episode, you know.
Of course. Where, if they want to join a group of friends, they got to do drugs. Mind you, they're like
that girl, oh my God.
They're 8 years old. It's just like, who? What? Yeah. In what world? I know we're in Chicago, but Jesus.
Yeah, the way that the girls talked, I was like, oh my God. The fact that she went to a treehouse and brought... drugs with her, you know, like she really took the idea of clubbing to heart. Get it?
That's a good one.
Thank you.
That was a good joke.
I couldn't believe it, you know. And this was, I was like, okay, yeah, this is the age of just say no. You know, you need to have this episode a little. I mean, it was very dramatic, which I was like, do I love her? Do I hate this? You know, when they're just like, she has like the joint in her hand and they're just standing there and it's like these dramatic like moments and the music swelling and all of this.
I mean,
you know,
I
this
love
is what
it.
These shows back then, they really used these shows to have these messages to kids. Cause also, you know, the 80s was a weird time, you know, like the Satan scare was like a real thing. You know, people were scared of like the media's influence to children.
Yes.
So the 80s became an overtly conservative place, because also, you know, unfortunately we had the rise of AIDS and all of these scares, the crack epidemic, all of this shit was happening in the 80s and people were freaking the fuck out.
No, it's true. I mean, that's, was really, if we could categorize the 80s in any way, it would be
conservative.
And I think fear-mongering.
And fear-mongering too.
I would say,
It was the Reagan era, you know? So media was really pandering to these conservative, I feel, families, or just like more wholesome content, you know? And even Hollywood at the end of the day, you know, everything, it was like ended with a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
So people really needed that kind of media to eat up. And I think Punky Brewster really wanted to address like all of that wholesome family content that people were craving in the 80s.
Yeah, it's a very, the show is very saccharine, right?
It is.
And yet, I didn't find myself.
I don't agree.
You don't think it was, you don't think the show was overly sweet?
I mean, I don't think
that's a bad thing. I was just going to say, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, no, yeah. I actually don't.
I feel like shows today, shows that are like family comedy, right, are like Full House and Fuller House. They have this like, all is people say words and there's the laugh track. People say words and there's the laugh track. And there's a cute kid and there's another cute kid. And this cute kid gets all into the chocolate pudding and it's covered and that's cute. And then roll the credits. But Punky Brewster,
you have beef on a specific Fuller Brewster, House episode.
I really felt that show. I mean, it did. It had the cute thing. It had the gambling dog. I've never seen so many episodes with the dog playing cards.
The dog is so adorable. The whole cast of kids was adorable, though.
He does magic tricks. He was just like playing cards. He was winning money. He was winning at poker and gym rummy. I never seen so many episodes about a dog playing cards. But at the end of the day, they had some serious... I mean, they dealt with the after-school special stuff. Of course, there was that. But then they had some really heartfelt things that made you think. It also made you recognize that kids are not dumb. They are affected by the world. They see things. They are struggling with things. There is underlying trauma going on that we're not paying attention to. Mm-hmm. And like Punky dealing with her being abandoned by her mom, and Sherry losing her parents.
Yeah.
They're being traumatized by seeing the shuttle explode.
For sure.
All these things that I feel like would not be a Fuller House special. You know?
I just don't think. Here we go. I agree with you 100% on that one. We're full house, right? I mean, I don't want to talk about Fuller House because I think when we talk about the new Punky Brewster, we can bring up Fuller House. But let's talk about Full House. Full House like would give us like special episodes, but I don't think they often involve, I think rarely did they involve like drugs. I think it was mostly like, I think one episode where DJ was considering having sex with Steve, one episode where they accidentally shoplifted. They were like, you know, they weren't like big, I don't know. There wasn't the special, they didn't deal with heavy stuff.
Like eating disorders were one of them.
Okay, eating disorders,
abuse,
right?
Like domestic, home abuse and stuff. Those were some of the issues they tackled.
Right, and yet, I don't think there was. It's weird. I don't know how Punky Brewster did it because watching their special episodes, though, they did feel sincere. They didn't feel like I actually found myself saying it's just like they actually handled this topic very well.
Yeah,
in a way that I don't think. Sometimes Full House, like, you could see through that charade, right? It's just like, they're hitting the cards because they had to give us a special. It's a sweeps season where, shockingly, I don't know how, and it could be because of the kids acting or just maybe it was just strong writing, but I actually never got, when you are watching a special episode from Punky Brewster, me and Nicole knew, like, those were special episodes. And yet, I'm saying, it's just like, oh, this is still very entertaining, right? And so they did that right. So, yeah, so I say it's saccharine, but, like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think they actually, they understood their audience. They understood the tone. Like, this is, the show was actually very solidly written.
For sure.
And it's, you know, it's one of those things where I didn't think I would enjoy it. I'm just like, oh, this is a very cute show.
I think that saccharine is not a bad thing. I think that you know exactly what it is you're getting into. And that's also kind of, you want to watch the show because you want your heart to feel like, you know, you want your heart to swell up. In the first couple of episodes, you know, when she's like, I'm gonna stay here, Henry, and he's like, I think you should go. And then she's like, oh, okay. And then she leaves and she's like, you know, what's wrong with me? Like, my mom, my dad didn't want me, and my mom, and now you. And you're just like, god damn it. I mean, this is like really on the nose writing, but oh my god, it's got me. You know, it's like that blend where it's just like, I know what they're going for, and it actually, it's just, it's kind of plain in its style, but that still works because it's actually like addressing real issues. And this is something that, you know, I'm going to relate to. And, like, it's going to make, you know, give a real emotional response.
Yeah. I will say.
So that's how I felt about the show.
No, I agree. I will say, like, Eddie, I checked out the Challenger explosion episode, right? Because Eddie had recommended it. And I was surprised. I think they handled it very well, right? Like, Punky Brewster was considering, you know, being an astronaut. She loved the idea. So when they're all in school, you know, they're all talking about future careers and stuff. She brings up that she wants to be an astronaut. So, like, he's just like, oh, my God, the shuttle's going to launch. We should all watch it. And, of course, we know what happens.
Yes,
so she gets sent home because she's just crying her eyes out. So that's what Buzz Aldrin makes his guest appearance.
Yeah. Yes.
Which to, how
classic 80s guest appearance. Well, you know, that's interesting, too, because, yeah, it dealt with the idea of trauma, you know, like seeing people burst into flames into the sky, you know. It's almost like a smaller version, but like we all experienced that at 9/11 too, you know. So like
exactly
later on that became something that was a little bit more enhanced, but like that itself is traumatic, and there's not a lot of things that like talk to that, like the fact that they even talked about how as a little child watching that, that's gotta fuck you up.
That's interesting. Yeah. So that's a great point that you just made. Did like family shows or kids programming deal with 9/11 at all that you remember? I don't remember.
No,
I don't remember at
all. I remember the Black Lives Matter movement on Black-ish. That is the closest thing that comes to recent memory of like dealing with like real shit in like TV shows. I guess the Connors has been doing that with COVID.
I saw a South Park episode right after 9/11.
Well, South Park is also not
for children. I was a kid watching it, but.
The only show I ever remember them referred to 9/11 was Seventh Heaven. When the brothers were just talking about their experience of knowing that this happened, and also thinking about like, I guess like being thoughtful or prayerful about those people in New York that were firsthand that this affected them so personally.
Did they call us sinners? So, I feel like that's what they would have said. It's just like, we must pray for those sinners in New York.
And that was the only show. I think there was a sense, too, of it being like too raw and not wanting to like completely address it immediately.
Yeah. Which is fine. But like, I think the truth is like there is a trauma that us, because we were like, I mean, we weren't like children. We were like, I was freshman in high school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was in eighth grade, so.
Like, yeah, so this is like, we're still young and impressionable. Like, that, those memories will still.
Yeah, no, for sure. We could do a whole episode on, you know, that, but.
But the interesting thing about the Challenger is that Punky Brewster episode talked about what was really happening across the nation. All these young kids witness the explosion of you know, the Challenger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, they're watching it because there was a teacher on it.
Yeah,
on the shuttle, and they're watching it, and they're all excited, and that happens, and it's like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It must be terrible, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
what a bummer.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, no, but I just, for the first time seeing this, I knew what I was watching, and I like every time those moments happen, and like, you know, so many like moments where people would just applaud and be like, that's right, Punky, you go see Henry and you stand up for it. And then finally that woman who was trying to get them apart was like, finally, like, they want to be together, they should be together. And everyone was like, that's right, you know, like, you know, that you're being set up for those moments, but you still kind of like are like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna applaud too, you know.
Of course,
like, it actually towed that line pretty well for me.
I actually now in retrospect, I'm thinking as I was watching the show, now thinking about it, having this conversation, I'm thinking actually the writing, it might not just be the writing. I actually do think a lot of this is very dependent on the cast. Like these children actors, they are actually all very good. And that's like, that is rare, you know what I mean?
I think so.
To get such a good cast of kids.
Soleil Moon Frye was exceptional as a child actress.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's such a shame to know like what she had to deal with like growing up, you know?
Yeah. Are you going to see her documentary?
I am. I'm actually very excited. After watching specifically the new Punky Brewster and like kind of the old stuff, I'm actually very excited to see like you know, like the truth is like I actually know Soleil Moon Frye is famous because like one of the diseases she had was one that make your boobs grow big, which I feel like, I think that was a reference on South Park too, when like BB started getting breasts. You know, she struggled with that because she was a very, very young girl. Yeah. She was a girl. She's not even like a young woman. She was a girl and just getting sexually harassed by like these perverts because she was, you know, a growing young woman. And
she had the surgery before her 16th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
and
young.
It's like, I mean, it's crazy that such a disease exists out there. But you know, I think she has openly admitted that she had struggled with other stuff too. Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, yeah, Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why I'm really interested to see the documentary. I know the documentary is more about her relationship with, you know, her friends who happen to all be these child stars, yeah. Teen actors and stuff like that. And just to see them at a point of a lot of them before things got really messy for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And before some, you know, and that led to some of them dying young.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing with child stars, right? Like the fact that Soleil Moon Frye can survive being a child star and, you know, be on a show almost, what, 30 something years later? That sounds about right.
35,
yeah, that makes sense, right? Because it's when you're older than me. 35 years later, I mean, that says something about her, right? And you know, it's rare when you get child stars who can like be super famous like that and like, you know, are normal.
Had a positive experience.
Yeah, like it is a rarity and stuff.
It is, unfortunately. We're finding out a lot about what happened in the 80s to children actors and just period, not just the 80s.
Yeah. All around.
Yeah.
Just to bring it back at least about just the quality of acting for these kids. So I rewatched all the heartwarming tearjerker episodes. That was the ones that I focused on. So I saw the Challenger one. I saw My Fair Punky one. When she goes to a high society party and she pretends to be high society.
Why
like
is that,
that
like a tearjerker episode?
Because it's one of those.
It was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, but it's one of those. It is one of those moments. Yeah, it wasn't so much a tearjerker, but it's one of those moments where it's just like, you know, you're just fine. You don't have to be anybody else but who you are.
Oh, okay.
You know, one of those episodes. But the one, oh my God, that had me going was the anniversary. It was an episode called The Anniversary when it's the anniversary of Sherry Johnson's parents' death. And this is a young girl who has not dealt with her parents', you know, sudden death. And she visits their grave. And she just gives this amazing tear-jerking
monologue
speaking to her parents and the pain that she's been struggling with and how unfair it is to be a little girl and have lost her parents. That was so good. It was so real, and it just cut my heart right there. Like
but I don't think I saw that one.
It's good. It's worth it. It is worth it. And it's just, and once again, it's also a beautiful testimony of this friendship that Punky and Sherry have.
Yeah.
And for everyone who doesn't know, Sherry is played by, if you guys watched Family Matters growing up, she was Maxine's, she was Maxine, Laura.
That's how friend. I know her.
That's, yeah.
She
that's
seems
where you,
so familiar, yeah.
You didn't put it together? Yeah, because I saw the new Punky Brewster first before I started watching the old ones, I was just like, is that Maxine? What is she doing in this? And Eddie told me, like, she was like an original cast member. I was just like, no way, she's from Family Matters.
So Sherry Johnson, who is also who's played by the actress Sherry Johnson.
Oh, is that her name?
Yes,
also?
That's
her
role.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
This role was created for her in mind.
Wow.
Her uncle was one of the producers of this Punky Brewster. So this role was created
for her.
Okay. Nepotism at work.
No,
look at that.
But she was good.
She was awesome. She's just awesome on this show.
Sometimes nepotism gets it right. Oh, yeah. Like, it is so nepotism.
So the thing about Punky is, other than it's really good and catchy theme song, is that it tells you what it was like. It's a really good time capsule piece, right? This is what it was like growing up in the 80s, right? Other shows do it well, but, you know, this is definitely a good example of what it was like growing up in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And that's what a good sitcom at least should do, I think. It should definitely speak to its generation when it came from. And we'll see whether or not this 2021 one does that. So that shall we go to the new one?
Sounds like fighting words, and I'm so excited to hear you and Eddie duke it out. I can't wait.
Well, so like I said before, Soleil Moon Frye really, really cherishes her time spent on the Punky Brewster show. And she has always championed a return of the show. So, you know, in the day and age of all these television revivals and with NBC bringing up Peacock and needing, you know, people to want to binge their shows, they decided that one of the contents that they should push out for Peacock is a new revival of Punky Brewster.
I wonder how that conversation goes in the pitch meeting, right? Like Soleil Moon Frye is like, yo, I've been trying to get this. Yeah, I've been trying to push this for forever. You know what? They're like, you know what? Yeah, we need a new show. Fine, here's a budget. Here's Freddie Prinze Jr. Make it happen.
Yeah, serious Freddie Prinze Jr. Yeah. But yeah, so how they decided to do this was kind of like, you know, you mentioned Fuller House, and I think they kind of did go the Fuller House route, where it's just like, it's not just the old characters, it's a bunch of the next generation, right?
Yes.
So Punky is a mother, and she has three children, a biological and two adopted. Yes. She is separated from her man, of course, because the actor has passed. Henry is no longer with us, but she still lives in the same apartment. She is now herself a photographer, and Sherry is still her best friend, and Sherry works at Fernster Hall. So their lives have not changed.
But Sherry is a lesbian. That is a big change.
Yes, which I have so much gripe with, and we'll get to that in a
second.
Oh,
you have gripe with it? Oh, I can't wait. Okay, I'm curious.
Should I just get to this immediately?
No, hold on.
Should we talk a little bit more about plot?
Let's talk a little bit more about the actual show.
I just want to point out that the actor that played Henry passed away at 98 years old.
Oh,
good
geez.
For him. Good for him. Indeed. Get into that old Betty White age. Good for you, man.
Or his last words, Punky, goodbye. Is that mean?
Or maybe it was maybe it was a fat joke. So she has three kids. Her eldest is Hannah.
That sounds about right.
The two boys were Daniel and Diego, and the oldest was Hannah. Her ex-husband, who is like a traveling musician and who's in and out, but a lot more in than, you know, we would be led to believe. His name is Travis.
Right. It makes you wonder, just like, why are you separated? I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's for plot point.
Will they, won't they?
Well, everything's for plot point.
Of course.
Everything's going to be for plot point.
It is media.
They give you why. They tell you why separate.
Yeah, why they don't work out.
But on top of her three children,
of the show, and I love it.
On top of her three children, they have a new character come in to their lives, not just the show. Her name is Izzy, and she is pretty much, you know, 2021's answer to Punky Brewster. She has also been orphaned and abandoned by her parents. She is trying to escape Fernster Hall, and Sherry, you know, asks Punky to take her in, and Punky sees herself in this young kid. And indeed,
correct,
Izzy is pretty much her counterpart. And so she takes her in, and now she has four kids, which is a lot of kids.
A lot of kids in like a small apartment.
Yeah.
By the way, a lot of kids for a 20-minute sitcom. It's also the same apartment. I don't, you know, obviously not the same set, but it's supposed to be the same apartment that we grew up with.
Yeah, I said that, right?
Did you? I don't think you did.
Their lives haven't changed. She still lives in his apartment.
I wasn't listening.
She's a
photographer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks so much for showing that you don't listen to me. but yeah, so Punky Brewster as an adult. Is this how you pictured Punky Brewster to be as an adult? I just want to ask you guys that. You know, watching the show, being like, oh man, this is who I envision her being when she grows up. Does this Punky Brewster meet that for you?
Okay, I feel like only Eddie can answer that because I saw them in reverse order as I usually do.
There you go. Yeah,
I could not answer that. In fact, it was more like for me, it'd be watching. I watched the full series actually. I actually finished it, and it's more like watching that scene. Is like, how did we get to this Punky? And then watching the original. So Eddie, is this a Punky that you would have imagined?
Yes, this is the Punky. In her, who would be probably late 30s or early 40s, right?
Mm.
So we're skipping the 20s,
yeah,
and stuff like that. But this is the Punky, the full adult, the grown woman,
you would imagine. So, being
I would imagine
her being a photographer.
I mean, her dad was a photographer. Uh-huh. I mean, we saw the episode where he was already was like hoping that she would be one,
giving her a camera
and stuff like that. So it's so funny because it's like when you're a kid, it's like the things that you do, like you have these dreams, like wanting to be an astronaut or be a scientist or be a doctor. But sometimes you end up being a little bit closer to what your mom and dad have done.
Yes, 100%.
Being influenced. I mean, my parents are not case managers or social workers, but my mom and dad always were offering themselves to other people. You know, being a service to other people. So I definitely can see where that came from.
Yeah, interesting. When it comes to me. And I'm working in my dad's old office.
There you go.
I work
see,
off
hey.
Of now, so, hey.
Yeah.
yeah.
No, I don't do it all. Well, my mom is somewhat creative, but
there you go.
It's interesting though, because I totally agree that 100% you are going to step. Most kids, you know, follow the footsteps of the person who raised them and whatnot. When I watched Punky Brewster, the original, I thought that Punky herself is kind of unconventional. You know, like when she's at her hearing at the court, she's sitting on the judge's desk and he's like, oh, Punky, okay, I'll let you sit here. She's different, you know, the shoes, the way she carries herself, the way she holds herself in the shit fucking, you know, like hand that she was dealt at life.
Right.
Very unconventional. I wasn't expecting her to be so conventional, I guess, as an adult.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But what, so I feel like she was conventional, yet still unconventional enough. I will say she
kind
was,
of.
There was a little bit of quirk. A normal, I feel like most people don't adopt after having a biological child.
Yes.
For example, that's one.
Okay.
Divorce is actually more common than uncommon, so I guess that's pretty conventional. But that's no one wants a divorce.
She lives in her old apartment, you know. Uh-huh. I thought maybe she might, I don't know, maybe she might travel more, maybe she might be more a little unconventional, but like she pretty much has my job. And like I that was relatable in the sense where it's like, oh yeah, weddings and stuff, that's the worst. Like when you're creative and you're stuck to that, I get where you're at in your life, Punky. But like I guess I didn't think that she would be so domestic too at the same time.
But well, at the end of the day, Mama is a single mom.
Uh-huh.
Not with
this
four
is
kids.
This is who they made her to be, yes.
And the dog. So I mean, you just at a certain point you decide in life, okay, yeah, I gotta, you know, I gotta bring home regular paycheck. I can't be jumping out on the airplanes taking pictures.
Not everybody makes that decision though. And I thought Punky Brewster would have been one who wasn't like, oh, at the end of the day, I need food in front of me. Like she would have lived a little bit more of an unconventional life.
But yeah, I think that's
I was led to believe that she would be in the original. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Okay. Interesting. I mean, I think that's a fair thing. I think though that she ends up taking on the role of obviously the role of Henry, right? Like she, you know, she has such a great paternal figure in her life that like it's only a parental figure, not even paternal, right? A parental figure.
Yes.
That it would only make sense for her to want to bring that to kids. I have to assume that's part of the reason why she adopted also, right?
Yeah. I also would have assumed that maybe she wanted some time alone and to explore the world instead of jumping right into a motherhood, which is what it implied by her age and stuff.
I don't know. It she's in her late 30s like and the kid is like 16. No way.
She looks great for her age. So
she would have been in her 20s when she had the kid, though. So it's not like that.
Mid
to late 20s.
That's a pretty average age to have children.
I guess for her age. Yeah. I don't know. I guess.
A more unconventional thing would be maybe having a kid at 40, which I could believe Punky Brewster would do. I don't know. Like,
granted,
I might be nitpicking. I'll admit that. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, this all just seems like, you know, like she kind of just followed the path that a lot of people follow.
Interesting. Did you watch it in reverse order, though? Or did you?
I did not. No, I watched
the
original.
Okay, so you watched the original. Okay,
watch the original first.
Okay. So then I feel like your criticism there is valid. But for me,
last thing I will say, well, there were two moments that I was like, opportunity missed. One was in the opening when she wanted to take Izzy in. I believed that. Okay. The reaction that her children had to possibly taking Izzy in, I could not believe that Punky Brewster would have raised children like that.
Well, I don't know. I don't think, at the end of the day, I didn't want my mom bringing in homeless people into the house. You know, no matter how good, you know, it's like,
you also didn't have the childhood that Punky Brewster had.
I know, but you're a kid. You're like, these are kids and it's already a tight space already. I'm already sharing my room with my brother.
But she didn't say that.
Yeah.
she said, I have no time for myself and the things that I want to do. Like, it was a very selfish response.
Yeah. But I also think that's just
very typical kids, but. Punky, again, I'm just like, did Punky Brewster raise this child? Like, I don't know. Maybe I have this idea of who I think Punky Brewster is.
But Hannah is also, she sees herself as a second parent.
She does.
That's the thing.
That's a little annoying on her part.
It's like, we already know that the reason that Punky, we find, you know, as the show develops, we find out that the reason that they're, you know, they're divorced is because he wasn't around. You know,
yes.
He was always touring. He was being a musician.
Yeah.
She was left alone raising. And I know at some point, Hannah realized that she had to be the mature one. She had to be, because mom's going out there trying to, you know, make money. Dad's, we don't know when Dad's coming home because he's on tour. So she, I know she was like playing big sister. I know my, like my sister had to be like, had to be second mom, taking care of me and my two little sisters all the time because, you know, my parents worked or they had other, other responsibilities. So I do see a certain point, like, do we really need this? You know,
yeah, I mean, I could get that if it was maybe if it came across just a little less selfish, you know, there could be valid reasons for it, but it was just the way that it was done. And at least the dialogue lines they gave her, I was like, you rotten little shit. I mean, like, do you know who your mother is? This happened to her. How are you going to deprive a child of this life?
But we also, but I think it's also, I think it's also said that like, she doesn't really talk about that part of her past too much with her kids.
Well, they know who exactly who Henry is. His picture is right there.
But not the fact that she herself was like abandoned and all that stuff. She actually admitted that to Izzy, right? Like, this is stuff that she doesn't really talk about with her.
I mean, her,
she doesn't talk about this with her kids because, like, she also is a mother and protecting them from a certain, as I feel like a lot of parents will end up doing, right?
Yeah.
I still, I mean, I guess maybe you guys thought that that moment worked more. I just didn't think it worked.
I actually,
but that was also,
was,
that was a moment that I was like, this is kind of, this is too ordinary for Punky Brewster. Like, why is this so ordinary? Why is this so, I see this in other realms, you know? Like, I wanted something a little bit more unconventional. And my last thing I will say about that is because we could definitely argue on this one a lot, so I want to get to it.
Oh, yeah, go.
Is that I would also be led to believe that Punky Brewster would be more sexually free when she got older. And I really think that it was a cop-out for them to give the role of either the bisexual or the lesbian to Sherry and not Punky.
Oh, actually, I will agree with you on that one. I actually think it would have made for a much more compelling story if instead of Freddie Prinze Jr., it was Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Ooh.
And because they're married.
Or it could have been Freddie Prinze Jr., but maybe she wanted to go, maybe she met a woman. You know, maybe I would see Punky Brewster as a pansexual.
I can see that.
Or bisexual, or maybe, I don't know, a lesbian, but somewhere on the spectrum. And it just sucks because whenever they have these characters, they would never make it the main character. It's always a secondary character. And it just seems so passe for Sherry. I really think that it's more believable for Punky. And that actually would have been great for that character to have that, because other than the fact that it's believable, it's like, oh wow, we're having a main character with that storyline. But then it would just became this conventional scene before will they won't they with like a husband who's like, oh, I changed my mind, I want to come back into the family, you know? It's like, I've seen this,
but he doesn't. Oh, he wants to be part of the family, but not in the way that like the will they won't they situation.
Well, I mean, the whole time you know that like they're gonna maybe hook up again or something, even though they divorced. Oh, I mean, in one of the episodes, he like coerces her into kissing him or something, you know? So it's always like that line that they're toting and stuff. So I just, that, I love when there's LGBT characters, but I'm like, make them the right characters. Like Punky would have been great.
I can't say I disagree with you on that one. I think if they had made Punky Brewster like have a lesbian relationship, or actually even leaving, I feel like leaving your husband for a woman might be a little, not something that for a sitcom.
Well, no, her husband left her, so now she's out there seeing people.
Experimenting,
so why
with
not
women?
Experiment
fine.
With a woman?
I agree with you. Yeah, that would be fine. But we don't know for sure yet. We don't. I mean, there's no confirmation, yo. That like, technically speaking, like, yeah, your point is valid, but we don't know. We can make the implication that like she is heterosexual, but like we don't know for a fact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean. I mean, for a show, you know,
they could surprise us.
They could, if they hear this complaint, then maybe they'll insert it into season
maybe, two. Maybe Soleil Moonfry is listening right now. She's just like taking notes and she's just like, you know what? They're right. I'm going to les out.
I highly believe that. So those were just kind of the things that I felt like they made Punky more conventional than I would have led, what I was led to believe she would grow up to be.
Uh-huh.
And those are some of my examples, I guess, of that. But I also just think that...
Punky Brewster herself, from my understanding, never wanted... Yeah, she was, like, unconventional, sure. But, like, isn't on some level all she wants to be just a normal girl? Like,
I think,
normal person? Isn't
that,
like, the goal of
all kids?
Yes,
I think she wanted
kids?
To experience love. And that love comes in many different ways. Either conventional or unconventional love. And just because she might want, just because I expected her to have a more unconventional life doesn't mean I think she wouldn't have love.
Man,
you know what I mean?
Fair. Eddie. All right. So wait, Eddie, you're going to say something. It sounded like, and I was.
No, I just, yeah, it would have been definitely interesting to have that. And I would have just loved to see that just be an aspect of her character. And I'm also fine that it's not. I like the chemistry that's between her and Freddie Prinze Jr., this back and forth. I very much like his character, and kind of the older guy that's recognizing, hey, maybe I should slow down a little bit and be there for my kids who love me, you know? And his beginning, his tenderness towards Izzy, you know, having that already, his heart is already kind of like has made room for her.
Yeah, right. I think he's more unconventional than Punky is. I mean, he's there in the house making pancakes, and comes some stranger, and he's like, "You sure you don't want my pancakes?"
Yeah,
right.
You know, but like that's more of what I would have gotten from Punky.
I think what I got from the beginning was that it did come to a point where Punky kind of lost or wasn't tapping into what she calls her Punky power, you know, and then she meets Izzy, and something is reawakened in her. Izzy says, wait a minute, you do weddings and you used to do that? You used to jump out of planes? What happened to you, lady? You know? And so there is a kind of recognition that at some point we become grown ups and we start adulting, and then we kind of disconnect to the things that we used to love or feel passionate about or that made us unique and unconventional. You know, that whole enter midlife crisis, so to speak. And then it's like wanting to get back to that and reconnect that. And I think Izzy presents that opportunity for Penelope Brewster to become Punky Brewster again, and to reconnect to her Punky power. And now that has taken itself to be, you know, that power can express itself, and it seems to be expressing itself to be this caring mom, who wants to create a home where her kids can, you know, can grow up and follow their dreams and be unique, you know, and we see this beautifully done, I think, with her affection to I think it's Diego.
Yes, you know? So Diego is the kid who is potentially he's exploring being non-binary. Maybe the implication might be that maybe he is trans, maybe he's not, but you know what, they're going to let him figure it out. And then, you know, they had an open discussion in some of those episodes about his identity and stuff, but they, you know, I think as a family they decided, you know what, we're not going to push it, let him decide when he's ready to come to us and kind of stuff. And I thought handled well.
I thought it was handled pretty good. I think her scene when she's telling her ex-husband, oh, you know, Diego's wearing makeup. And he goes, how do we feel about this? And she said, well, let him figure it out. Let him explore and stuff like that. And she starts saying, you know, she starts using all these terms. And he said, wow, we didn't have these words when we were growing up. Right. You know, kind of recognizing there was no language for this. But now there is. But now there's this language that we're using in connection to parenting. What it is to be a parent to an individual who is figuring that out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I just really appreciate that. And just knowing, like, let's give them space. Let's let them figure it out. Instead of having these ideas or these gender normative, you know, types or framework placed on us, they're giving the opportunity for their kids to make their own space.
No, I think it was handled well. I think so. The only thing that I will say about this, though, is when you introduce a character like Sherry being LGBTQ, one of your potential kids being possibly non-binary, trans, not sure, it hits a certain point where, like, I feel like they're trying to hit like a lot of check marks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this show is interesting because I actually feel like, yeah, I can see that they were trying to hit certain check marks and hit like certain, not, I don't want to say like a quota, but like it felt that way. However, I will say even though I could start seeing through that facade, it wasn't to the point of, it didn't feel, it never felt, it felt like it never felt insincere. It just felt like it was just like not necessarily the best writing, not as strong writing as like the original Punky Brewster, right? Because yeah. I could start seeing through those cracks where I'm just like they're kind of pandering a little. And yet, it still was strong enough. Where
I disagree.
Like,
oh my god, I'm so mad right I think now. I'm so mad.
I feel like it was. However, I actually think, but this is the problem. This is the thing. It actually, but it never hit me to the point where it turned me off from the show because sometimes if it there's a point, and I can't explain it, but there is a point when like pandering will turn you off. This one for me, it didn't. That's why I was actually able to finish the show because I think the show was still sweet. I ended up liking the cast.
Yeah. I mean, you could be pandered to and still I'm like, hey, give it to me. I want this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, give me what
but
I want.
But I'm usually of the boat that I don't want it, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But so for me to like actually be able to finish the show, I think that says more so. It wasn't. So this is where I think Fuller House comes into play, right? There's Fuller House is one end of the spectrum of how you can revive a show. Then I would say on the other end of how you're reviving a sitcom is One Day at a Time. One Day at a Time. I think that is...
That was a remake, though.
Oh, it is a remake. Shoot. You're right. Maybe that doesn't...
I just don't think that they can be compared.
You're right.
I mean,
maybe it can't
there is Will
we
and Grace
a good...
does that, you know?
Oh, okay, fine. Will and Grace is a good one. I think Will and Grace is a higher standard, right? This one falls like closer towards... I would say this one falls closer to... It's like
Fuller
right
House.
In the middle.
No, yeah,
I think
because,
it's in the middle.
Oh,
for
I grew
me,
up
it's
in
a,
the 80s. And...
I think for me, it's like in the middle. I don't think it's Fuller House is terrible. Fuller
I've never
House,
seen it.
Okay, so actually. Fuller House has like, what's it called? It has like almost no soul. It's just like kind of just comedy, but like kind of, it's not good comedy. Well, at least this one, like they're trying to show me interesting characters. They're trying to do things, you know. Yeah, it might be a little too, they're trying a little too hard to be PC. But this is kind of the era that we're in, the PC era, right?
So, it is,
like, this
yeah,
is,
of course.
We're
it's
in this
actually
weird transition
perfect...
where like, how... The original Punky Brewster defined, like, can easily tell us what the 80s was like. I feel like it's very safe to say that this show is also doing the same thing. It's showing us, like, we're kind of in this weird point in time where we're trying to show representation every which way. And sometimes that's just, like, it does feel like it's pandering to. But, like, this is kind of this is the way it is at the moment. So we just have
for
to, like,
sure.
until we transition out of it.
It's the perfect time to revive 80s TV shows, too, because they're wholesome and stuff, and we kind of want that. So this is kind of how I feel about Punky Brewster. I think that I completely agree with Eddie and what the show was going for. But I differ from Eddie because you think it worked for you, and for you, you really appreciated it, where it didn't work for me. Because I saw a lack of focus and a lack of good, clear writing. I felt like things were introduced and then weren't, you know, fulfilled those stories. And I saw a lot of beats missing for me. So I felt like, oh, I'm supposed to be feeling this. And yet I feel nothing. And I'll give you, I guess, an example is
yes,
in the first episode, my big... example that I brought up already was the kids' reaction to Izzy and stuff. And so all three of them are not cool with another kid in the house, but we really only see Izzy win over the oldest kid's heart by hooking her up with the boyfriend in the elevator. Then when the two parents who want to adopt Izzy come and Punky has that moment in the clubhouse with Punky, with Izzy, and then she goes back and then she's like, wait, I can't let you leave. She looks over at her two kids. And the two kids nod at her like, do it, mom. And it's like, wait a minute. I don't even remember the beat where the other two kids accepted that Izzy should be a part of this family. Where did they even have a interaction with Izzy? I didn't really see that. Or if I did, it wasn't memorable enough, right? So that's also where it's like, I also agree with Rolando in the sense where it did kind of feel like check marks because, well, you got this kid here for representation, which I love, but I have no idea who this kid is until episode 4. I get that he's... or I'll say they, I should say they to be more respectful.
That's
I
fair.
Get that
I
they're,
that's a good point.
I think they are neat freaks and the other one's messy. Cool. That's about all I know for like the first couple of episodes. But like, so it's those moments where it's like, are you just doing this to have representation? Are you just doing this to make me happy? Because story wise, writing wise, you're not giving me what I actually want these stories to be told. As a person of the community, I want to see myself reflected in this, and there wasn't enough storyline in these 20-minute episodes that mostly are about Punky, because she's the main character, Why does she have to have three kids? Why couldn't she have maybe one other kid and then Izzy? You know, so to focus more on these stories and then maybe all these things that you're trying to represent put into Punky instead of just making her a basic cis woman, which at the end of the day, I was excited that maybe Punky wouldn't have been that. And then she kind of was. And she's dealing with issues that other moms on other sitcoms are dealing with.
I agree with you on that, where I think there were too many kids. I think you could have gotten, if you're going to keep the fact that they adopted after having a biological child, I would have gotten rid of the older one, right? And kept Diego, the younger one, right?
Yeah.
Only because, like, I feel like you can do more with that kind of character. And it helps create balance in a show. So I will agree with you, too many kids. That hindered, I think, the show. But yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, the show predominantly is really about Punky Brewster and Izzy, though.
Yeah.
Right? So I think I think another solution would have been just, like, maybe Punky herself could have not been with the children. Like, maybe Freddie Prinze is taking the kids because, like, she is so unconventional.
Yeah.
I mean, we're thinking of ways that you could fix the show. I don't know. You know, I think too many kids was a problem. I don't think it's not the end of the world for me, though. I actually think, I don't know. I thought, like for me, the show was just sweet enough where I was just like, I'm still enjoying it. I don't know if it's maybe because, like, we've had to watch a string of terrible things for this podcast.
I don't think it's terrible. I think we've watched worse things this year. But I guess, you know, you brought up One Day at a Time, so I'll hop back to that. You brought that up because that's an example of when, even though you're checking off check boxes, it works. And I think for you and I, you know, as we're Latinos, that's also like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing representation that I identify with, right? Yeah.
So yeah, because they had a voice. Yeah, mm-hmm. Which I agree with you on this one, right? Where Punky, this show feels less like it's like kind of meandering. It hasn't figured out, like, all right, what is going to be the main focus? Like, are we going to focus on the fact that, like, maybe one of our kids may be trans? Are we going to, you know what I mean? And that's the problem when you have, like, too many kids.
And the first episode was too busy with revisiting the old beats of the first episode, especially with Izzy, that's where it was like, oh, these moments that are supposed to be heartfelt with the other characters just are there. Mm-hmm. And I don't really feel anything personally. So I do think that the show, if it's going to continue, they really need to, like, they need to get their focus straight, and they need to also, like, flesh out some characters more, because it's kind of overstacked at the moment, in my opinion. And I couldn't really grasp at anything. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think I have enough time with these characters to really figure out. Now, I didn't completely finish it. I watched more than half of it. But I still, like, by episode, I think the first time I laughed was by episode 5.
Oh, where really? I will say.
She went on her first date with that guy, and, like, his faces when he was playing guitar. I actually found that funny. That was actually a good episode.
Yes, yeah, Seth Green. It was Seth Green.
No. It was the musician. And then she's like, what is he doing? And he's one of those
the one with the funny faces.
Makes faces when he's playing guitar.
Yeah, there was, like, the sex faces.
Yeah.
Basically. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that's so funny. I actually found myself, like, laughing throughout the show. Maybe that's why I enjoyed it. I was just like, this is cute. The kids, I mean, I will say, like, again, casting in terms of kids, like, I actually found myself, Izzy was great. This little girl they played, Izzy, I thought she's wonderful. Diego as well. The other two, you know,
the kids are fine. They just don't have the material.
I can agree with that. Now Sherry, though, I mean, going back to the lesbian, Sherry, she is in a committed relationship with another woman, and I mean, do you want a spoilers? I mean,
sure, give me spoilers. What happens?
All right, well,
when they
she
break
gets
up?
Engaged. They have a very sweet engagement episode.
Cool. That's sweet.
I thought that's actually very sweet. And that's where the will they, won't they between her and Freddie Prinze Jr. hits, like, another critical point. But we won't get into that.
So in the backstory, gay people are having a good time. But in the front center, straight people are.
I guess, actually, Nicole's right about that. Technically speaking, This is actually very true because Punky Brewster is the A character.
She is. She should. That's why it's like opportunity missed. Make Punky more of all these things that you're giving to the B characters, because I would believe it. Punky's the character who would be these things.
That's actually, yeah. Now that you're mentioning all this, I don't disagree with you. So interesting. I guess that's stuff that they could have done. But there is the other major plot point that is carrying throughout the show is
the mother.
Reuniting Punky with her mother, who we never saw in the original run, to my understanding, right, Eddie?
Not that.
Okay, and that would be giving her closure, ultimately, to that part of her life, which I think it was handled. I think it was handled delicately enough. It's not necessarily my favorite thing to do, because, like, I don't know. I guess I've never been in that situation, but, like, how if, like, my parents abandoned me and then they try to come into my life. Granted, you know, whatever the reason may be, like, there's still all this hostility for me. You know, this Punky has kind of made peace with that because of the love she found through Henry and stuff. That's her storyline. But, you know, that's something that she had to deal with. I thought it was handled delicately enough where it didn't upset me when that storyline came to an end, which was the ending of the season. Eddie, how did you feel about that one? Because I know you saw it through.
So it was very funny because, like, knowing that was always the underlying thing for Punky Brewster when I saw the original, and was like, you know, how can this little girl be abandoned and stuff like that? And then the end of the first episode when she gets that call.
Shit, sorry, hang on.
That's so rude.
It logged me into like, it logged me. Sorry. Jesus. It logged me into like Clubhouse because there was a notification. I was trying to get rid of it and it logged me in. I'm sorry.
So, I was quite surprised when she gets the call at the end, and it's her mom. And it's like, I felt that, like, wow, is this an opportunity to give this character closure of that trauma in her life, that childhood trauma, and give her this closure to, you know, in this point as being a mom, as being an older mom, you know, to have this. So I was happy with it. I was very much happy. I was happy of their conversation at the end in the cafe. And, you know, when she told her, like, I don't need a mom in my life. I had a mom and it was Henry.
Which I found funny. I actually laughed at her. It wasn't supposed to be funny, but I was just like, come on. Like, Henry wasn't a mom. Henry was your dad.
You guys are ridiculous.
I'm just saying.
Because here you are talking about gender, non-binary, stuff like that. Here she's seeing her the full spectrum of what this man was in her life, right? The full spectrum.
Yes,
and she makes a comment that he played both mom and dad.
Okay, you're right. No, yes. You know, but the way she did say it,
no,
I was...
she said it perfectly. She said it perfectly.
Yeah, because I remember this. I didn't see that.
So she said it perfectly, and it made sense. And it's just to recognize that she had these roles in her life, that even though her mom left, she was able to have these roles in Henry, her adopted dad, and he played a lot of roles for her. Obviously, yeah. Okay, but also the opportunity to know what happened, like why she was abandoned.
Why was she abandoned?
Oh, okay. Spoiler. Eddie, I'll let you explain.
Well, I know it seemed her mother was an alcoholic, and it seemed that her mother was at a point where she knew that it was just really getting bad for her. They were basically on the streets, homeless. And it seemed that Punky, she told her, I think I wasn't taking care of you. You were taking care of me. And I knew that I was at a point that I felt like I was going to lose this battle, or I was just going to be lost. And I didn't want you to get lost. So that's why I let you go.
Interesting.
Because I didn't think I was going
to
make it.
And did she explain why it took her 30 years to find her?
Yeah, it took her a long time to
clean up.
To clean up. It took a long time to
clean up. That's a lifespan. Jeez, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, addiction, that part of the story is not unheard. Like, that addiction
can be.
I think, for me, the only thing I had one qualm was just...
Oh, my gosh. She has good skin. Jesus.
No, an alcoholic who is strung out would not have good skin like that. It just would not. She did not... Jesus. The casting, I thought, was off. They should have picked someone who looked a lot more tired and a lot older.
I want to see this episode.
Alcoholic and strung out for, like, 30 years and, like, you know, constantly going in and out of, like, rehab... I just feel like you would look more weathered.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I think that's also especially more true of, like, people who are addicted to substances, like, say, crack or something. But that's an interesting...
That's a very small qualm on my part, Eddie. Like, you make it seem like I hate the show because of it. I don't. I actually, I'm surprised at how much I actually.
It's just that you always focus on that, like, little thing.
I always focus on, like, little things.
Except the beautiful moment she's having while her mother's giving an AA testimony, and Punky's in the audience, and her mom doesn't know that she's there, and being able to, like, get a very sincere and honest look at her mom on. At least get the tip of the iceberg of the story.
I feel like fans of Punky Brewster have always kind of wanted this point of that show addressed. So I don't know if you're talking about whether or not you had a problem with that storyline or Rolando, but I feel like
I didn't.
I think that was only natural that the show would address that.
Right.
So I'm glad that they addressed it in a way that seemed fitting. That seems really fitting for Punky.
I thought so. I agree. I thought it was fine. I thought it was, yes. Like, I remember asking Eddie while I was watching the show. I was just like, is this canon? Like, did she really get abandoned in the
parking lot?
Parking lot? Yeah. And Eddie's like, yes, that's her main storyline, Rolando, you fool.
Does the show ever address her trauma or Sherry's trauma from refrigerators?
Oh, yeah. No, Sherry's refrigerator trauma comes back.
That's great.
That's part of the reason why I had to watch that episode, because they're like, you must watch it. You need to know why she's afraid of refrigerators. So I'm just like, hilarious. I actually am so curious to know why she's afraid of refrigerators.
Yes. Like, that's so good.
And we didn't talk about the dog. There's another golden retriever whose name is Brandy. So that's cute. Definitely.
It was cute.
That dog is living in the other dog's shadow.
Yeah. I think all right, so Eddie, I'm gonna ask you, we usually don't, but like, I feel like you're the fiercest defender of the show right now, but do you think the new Punky Brewster was needed?
Okay, so you know I'm not a big fan of that question.
Okay, well, that's our question, Eddie. I always think,
you know, it's like, I feel like none of these things are ever needed.
I mean, yeah, okay. Nothing is ever needed.
Don't desire. Determine sometimes they are needed.
It's true.
So I'm excited about it. I'm excited about this revival of Punky Brewster. I think it is a very interesting... It's the beginning of a possibility of a very good show. I understand you guys... you know, how you guys feel about, like, a lot of kids, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe not enough time to really develop these characters. But, you know, as the show gets other... You know, moves on to other seasons, we get to see the possibility of that being rectified and being developed. I'm excited about representation. Yes, I know that we talk about pandering, but we also talk about the desire of seeing people like us represented on these shows, and also see, like, the struggles and also the joys and what is the possibility of being LGBTQ and raised in this kind of environment where your parents are like, hey, let's figure this out together. You know, I'm here for you. I'm giving you space. Okay? I feel very much this is needed. Thank you, Rolando, for trying to hurry me up.
I spoke
for like 15 minutes about this whole diversity and pandering thing, but I don't feel I was pandered to. I don't.
Okay.
I feel like if we want it, if we want it and we're getting it, we should say, hey, this is great. Let me tell you how we could do this better, but let's not ignore it, or let's not be so upset about it, because we're actually getting it. And I think, like, moments like these, having a voice and saying, hey, this is good, but you know, this could be better. I'm glad that Sherry Johnson did not start out saying, hey, I'm the gay aunt. It didn't come out that way.
Yeah,
it didn't, you know, it was like, hey, I remember my first kiss or my most exciting kiss. And that's like, we knew, hey, Sherry's gay.
Yeah,
this is great. Let's see where this goes.
I'm gonna say that I don't know if I agree with the mentality that we should be grateful for anything we get, because a lot of times we get really poor.
I wouldn't say that. No. But, I wouldn't say anything we get. But I just think that I'm just saying that not to be like that. It so much checks all the boxes, or not to be so much that we're being pandered to. But look at it like this is an opportunity for a show to develop characters that we may relate to.
Yeah, and you know, that's, you have way more patience than I do, because if I want, if I'm going to invest my time in a show, make these characters well thought out and stuff. And so I do hope that they get there, because if you're going to present to me a character, I'd love to be able to connect to them on some level. And I really do hope we get that, because there is so much room for improvement, and there is so much room for like some real beautiful representation to happen here. So I see where Punky Brewster could go, and I definitely do hope that it goes there. You know,
there's in TV theory, and I'm butchering this, but there is like there's this theory of characters, specifically minority characters, when they are first they're ignored, then they're hated, then they're made fun of, and finally embraced, right? And I think we're kind of seeing the point of embraced, where for so long I think LGBTQIA characters were always more so the butt of the jokes.
Or the right? villains, yeah.
Or the villains, right. So to your point, Eddie, no, I agree. I know where you're coming from. Like, giving us characters is not... Yeah, I think actually we're moving in the right direction. I won't deny that, right? But it does feel like we're trying to get to that direction, like, kind of inorganically. Like, we're almost being forced. And I think we're just going to hit that point where, like, it will kind of, like, even it smooth out. You know, but we're also in a place, we're also in an era where there's like so much content being produced that it's just like, it's not going to be the quality content, right? So like, until exactly, you know, until we get that quality representation, like, yeah, you know, yeah, we complain, but like, of course I'm happier to see much more LGBTQIA representation, even in B roles.
Representation matters, but good writing also matters.
Yes, that's the thing.
And good well thought out representation, you know. I mean, I don't know what the writing staff looks like for Punky Brewster, but you know, I just don't want it to be like two white guys doing what they were told by the NBC executives to do, you know, like
Peacock executives.
Peacock is it different?
Well, NBC is owned by Universal, so.
Oh, well, anyway.
Universal execs.
So but at the end of the day too, like, you know, I have to just look at the writing. And I think the question that I ask myself when I look at Punky Brewster is, wow, who is this show aimed towards? Because you know, there's a Punky Brewster 1984. Okay, so that's late 30s, perhaps early 40s audience. Is this for children? Is this for them? You know, I don't know. I mean, is this for families? It's really, I can't pinpoint who I think they were going for in terms of writing. I think they were trying to go for everyone, and that's also where they got their lack of focus, I think, in their writing, where it was just like, oh, we want to relate to the old fans of Punky Brewster. We want to bring in some new people, you know, millennials and Gen Zers or whatever. And it just kind of felt like they were trying to please too many people.
I actually thought more so the show was going the route of kind of, you know, the target audience here was fans of Punky Brewster, like, proper, and then hopefully, like, at the age of like having kids of their own, so that they could watch this as a family show. I think the prime target here was families. And
yeah,
Peacock,
I mean,
subscribers, you know, because I don't know what their numbers are.
Yeah, I don't know either. So that's this why I feel like they were trying to hit a bunch of demographics and stuff.
I think it's actually more telling that NBC or Peacock has like decided to do like two big revivals on their platform, the streaming platform. Saved by the Bell would be the other one, right? Where they're not worried so much about like the numbers that come in from ratings. But they can attribute any success to it to, you know, stream, you know, it's just like, oh, well, people came to check out, you know what I mean? Check out these shows. So,
well, their main selling point is The Office. So they also know what age group
people are
getting.
So
I think that if they're going to put something that's mainly for streaming, and we know that older people aren't as into streaming as younger people are. And when I say older, I mean, like, I guess retirement ages and up.
No, I'm about to say, it's just like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah, like, I suppose streaming. 65 and up would be more, they still probably have. They're more likely to have cable packages. And
oh, yeah.
Maybe
there's
subscription
the people who are still
services.
Watching, you know, NCIS.
Yeah. I was wondering who's watching that show.
I'm constantly wondering who's watching NCIS.
Yeah, seriously.
That's
well, they're
up
probably
late at night.
The reason why Murder, She Wrote is still on reruns. So I appreciate them.
I'm
sure
that's also true. You know.
but yeah, so it's just, it's interesting too, because it definitely is, I think. Yeah, I guess it would be 50 and younger or whatever, but I just felt like they were trying to please a lot of different audiences and stuff.
But
so
do you
think
it was needed?
Well, so when I ask myself that question, I'm like, I'm not the demographic in terms of I'm not a Punky Brewster fan. And I'm not, I said this in One Day at a Time, that millennials don't watch sitcoms. And you corrected me. They don't watch in front of an audience, you know, multi-cam sitcoms.
Multi-camera sitcoms, yes.
I do feel like for, I can't speak for everyone in my generation, but I feel like we are less into that as maybe some people older than us are. And I feel like the younger kids are even less so. We like the one-camera shows with no laugh tracks a little bit more.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that we binge typically more. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of nostalgia for it and stuff, but there's also, it kind of feels dated. And these are just the thoughts that like went into my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, do I really need this and this and that? Overall, because I just don't hit any demographics, I'm very indifferent to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the valid one here would be Eddie and saying how much he, you know, what he got out of it. And that's like, this is, this show is meant for someone like Eddie.
Yeah, but, a fan of the original. I agree.
But I don't know. I guess as a person who has been, you know, in the Punky Brewster world for about a week, I think they could have done more for her. And I think that she herself deserved a little bit better. I'm not saying what she got was terrible. This was not terrible. It's worth a gander. But I think that they could have just made Punky, I'm gonna stand by that, they could have improved what they did with Punky in terms of an adult, and they could have very much kept this whole premise alive with still making her a little bit more unconventional and whatnot. And
yeah blah, blah, I blah. Mean I really didn't think twice about it, to be honest. Okay, got it. I mean, for me, I will say the show wasn't needed because I needed new Punky Brewster. It was only needed because I actually never had seen Punky Brewster. And geez, it's actually such a wonderful show that I'm kind of hoping, just like, you know what? I hope people check it out. Like, I hope people go out and check out the original, because the original one actually holds up. Like, that show is actually like pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if you know, and sometimes I think sometimes a revival can, if it's good for anything, it could be good for that. And I think this is one of those instances where, you know, am I going to be raving about the new Punky Brewster? No. Will I tell people it's just like, it's fine. It's a fine show. Check it out if you want.
But
man, you really need to check out the original Punky Brewster, because that show is
that
actually pretty fucking good.
Cute, yeah.
It is so good. And
can we just say that the 1980s were like the pinnacle of theme songs?
Yeah, yeah.
They're all so
sure.
catchy.
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I turn around.
So yeah, so that is my response to if it was needed or not. But I don't know, guys, you tell us. What are you, have you seen the new Punky Brewster? Were you a fan of the original Punky Brewster? Let us know. Email us, guys. Our email address is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. We're on Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals. And Nicole, where else can they reach out to us?
We have a hotline, and we have actually been hearing back from you guys. So keep it up, because we love it. And pretty soon, watch out for a special episode about that. If you want to call and leave us a voicemail, 862-248-2326 would be the number to call. I'll do that again. 862-248-2326.
Yes, Nicole has started spilling the beans on what we're planning. But yeah, we actually can't wait for you guys to hear these voicemails and emails that we've gotten.
Yes. And if you call in, you consent to being played on our show. So thank you very much.
Yes, for sure. Thank you, Nicole. That's actually a good point. It's in the message, actually. If people call in, like I say that, it's just like, we might play it on the air. So
you give your consent for this to be played.
Exactly. I should add that, like the legalese on that one. But yes. Punky Brewster. Every time I turn around, Nicole, yeah. I see you.
Every time I turn around, there's a new remake, reboot, and revival. And Rolando. Hey, the four R's.
Yes.
Hey.
I love it.
All right, guys. Everyone. This was fun, actually. I think this was a nice, fun, lively discussion, guys.
I think it's good chats.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'm glad we watched Punky Brewster, which I didn't think I would come out of this episode saying.
Yeah.
So that's all I had to say on that.
All right. Well, everyone. Until next time.
Stay unoriginal.